All right. Like to get started now. My name is John Evans. I'm the presiding officer for the 2021-02 subcommittee. I guess we'll quickly do introductions. To my right.
I'm John Duclo. I represent the Department of Environmental Services.
Tom Eaton, public member for the CC.
John Mark Turner, counsel for the subcommittee.
Michael Haney, attorney at DOJ, counsel for the subcommittee.
All right. Couple things to mention. Exits. There's the door that most of you came through over there, and then there's one here, and then one there. The quickest exit to the exterior of the building is through that door there. So this meeting will be recorded, audio recording, and obviously, unlike the last time, we don't have a stenographer, but it is being recorded. I do ask that when speakers come up, they come up and speak clearly into the microphone, just so that everybody can hear what's the discussion that's going on. We plan on allowing comments for 10 minutes. And then after that, the subcommittee will ask questions, and counsel possibly, that question period won't count towards the 10 minutes. So with that, I think the first item on the agenda, was to approve the, or to discuss the June 17th public meeting minutes. I didn't know if either of you had any questions or comments on those minutes.
This is John Duclo. I read them. I have no comments or edits.
Okay. I'd like to motion to adopt those minutes.
So moved.
All right. I vote yes.
John Duclo votes yes.
Tom Duclo votes yes.
All right. Then the motion is approved. So next, we will move on to the receiving public comments. So I guess similar to last time, my feeling is that we have, I believe it's eight speakers who have registered to speak. I would suggest probably we just handle them the same way we did the last time, alphabetically ordered. There was a request from the facility for two speakers. They did indicate that they only wanted 10 minutes total for those. I don't know, and that would be Barry Needleman and Rob O'Neill from Epsilon Associates, and Barry Needleman's from McLean Middleton, and Rob O'Neill's from Epsilon Associates. Do either of the two of you have any objections to going alphabetically again? I would say that probably I would like to put them still alphabetically ordered. The facility did request that they go last, to speak last. I'm inclined to say more that we would just go alphabetically. Thoughts on that, John? Anything?
I guess I don't have a problem with that. However, I thought the request to respond to any testimony that came up before them is legitimate, and I think we should afford them a chance to speak at the end, only on the comments that they hadn't had a chance to hear before the testimony. It provides some clarification from the facility's perspective, which I think would be warranted.
I think that's reasonable, but
you can always do that in your questions if you want to ask at the end too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's how we'll. If there's any, we could handle that through questions.
Okay.
At the end. All right. So with that, the first registered speaker was. Well, what I should probably do, since last time we did have an oversight, I have Ms. Berwick registered, and then Attorney Brooks, Barry Needleman, Rob O'Neill, Lori Lerner, Lisa Lanoz, Dr. Fred Ward, and Nancy Watson. Is there anybody here who I missed? Okay. All right, so with that, first...
Quick question on that?
Sure.
You said you're going to do an alphabetical order, right?
Yep.
Okay. Did okay. L's become before Needleman or O'Neill, right?
What's that?
L's before O'Neill.
I stapled right? them wrong. Yeah.
Just want to be clear.
Yep. My apologies. I stapled the packet wrong. But yes. All right. The first one is Ms. Berwick. If you wouldn't mind coming up to speak into the microphone, please. All right, and I've got a little timer here just so that you can see how much time you've got.
During the interim wind energy meetings, and I would hope that this committee has gone through those meetings.
Could you pull that a little bit closer? Try that.
During the interim wind energy meetings, and I would hope
Wait a second. I don't think that's on.
Yeah, that might not be on.
My time is clicking.
Yeah,
I'll reset.
Okay, so. Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll make it
up. Okay. During the interim wind energy meetings, and I would hope that you would have gone through the original meetings, repeatedly members of the committee commented on how assured they were by the protocols that were put in place to protect the members of the public that would be impacted by the windmills. These protocols would protect us. I'm in a butter. Any fool would know that there is no way to replicate sounds days later. But members of the committee were assured that this could be done. How? Well, the experts from Interim Wind Energy assured that this could be done. The obvious truth is that there is still no way to do this. So the very idea that the exact same conditions will exist at a certain time and a certain day is absurd and always has been. Yet, this was assured to the committee. So even before we talk about the testing protocols, it might be good to realize that the only way that you can really protect us, people, is to provide constant monitoring, especially since there's nothing that we can do that would be accepted by any of the NGOs committee. Our phones, sophisticated pieces of equipment, but we are not allowed to use them to document anything or to prove anything. So one point that was frequently discussed during the hearings was the method of monitoring. And during the hearings, Ms. Lanoz definitely mentioned the standards that were used. She definitely mentioned the time frequency. Never once was she challenged by anyone. In fact, there was a general agreement. Yes, this is how it would be done. Yet now, Ms. Lanoz is being said that she doesn't know that she, who was part of the actual committee that helped create the rules to protect the public from the sound, knows nothing. Mr. Rand, an statistician, I know I'm saying that wrong, knows nothing. Others that are experts know nothing. A very interesting tidbit is during those hearings, there was also this concern about wells, about blasting that was done, and the integrity of our wells. During that time, we were basically assured that wells that were close by, within a half a mile, would be tested. I know that I and every member of that committee and every member that was on our side, we felt sure that my well would be tested. Lo and behold, it was never tested. Somehow it was just outside those parameters. They knew it all along, but they led deception, deliberate deception. There's always been so much deception. The whole SEC hearing, I felt, was deception from the very beginning, that it was already decided. There were some particular remarks that were made. Mr. Robinson, our selectman, made a remark when I asked him if he would ever consider putting the turbines downtown. He said no. When I questioned why, he stated that it would affect too many people. So this answer told me that sacrifice in our family was acceptable. And I guess that that's how the SEC sees things too, that there are definitely families that could become sacrificed without any compensation, without any regard. The second comment that was made that stays with me was one that Mr. Clifford made during deliberations. He commented that when you move next to a pig farm, you can't complain about the odor. He was actually using this to say that we, the homeowners, don't have any right to complain about any of the effects of the turbines, but we didn't move next to the turbines. We've been there for years. They moved next to us. I realize that that doesn't actually relate to today's decision, but I want you to understand the long disrespect that we have felt as homeowners. How has the windmills affected us directly? We never sleep with our windows open. Never. Never. I always shut them before going to bed, if they're open at all, because we cannot sleep. I live in one of the most rural areas in New Hampshire. We have a road that is a dirt road that most people wouldn't even be willing to live on. But I cannot open my bedroom window at night. Some nights working at the table in my dining room, the noise just drums into my head. There's nowhere to escape it. Other times, it's perfect. I'm not going to stand here and say, my windows rattle, my windows have never rattled. I'm not going to say it's miserable all the time. It is not miserable all the time. But when it is miserable, it is really miserable. And there's no way to escape it. So today you are here to decide if you will follow the rules as they were written and intended, or if the industry standards are good enough. And isn't that what the committee really meant all along? I have no hope, really, that you will do what is right. I've long ago given up that idea. I have no hope that you even care about the effects on the abutters. I'm quite sure that in your eyes, your job is to approve any energy project. Let the people talk, and then just approve the projects. Still, here I am. I think I am the definition of insanity, to continue to do the same thing and expect a different result. I don't know why I do. Where are the complaints? I haven't filed any complaints. Why not? I've been asked that. But I did file complaints. I was asked to document. I was asked to keep records. I sent in records. I sent in screenshots of my phone. Nothing ever happened. How long am I supposed to do that? Why should we continue to complain? If you want, you can call the Edmonton Police Department. Ask them about a report from a Mr. Ivy, who lives down the road, who called to complain about the sound. People have no respect for this committee and don't think that anything will happen, nor the time involved. My neighbors next door that have three young children, the wife spent over 3 or 4 hours on the phone listening to one committee meeting in order to try and give her testimony. We have lives. We're not getting paid for being here. We have a lot of living that we have to do, and we can't take the time to be constantly coming here. We will all gladly put in our complaints of when the sound is really bad, if we feel like there's going to be follow-through. But if the follow-through is like the testing that was done, a 15-day sound assessment that eliminated all but 2 hours of time, or all but 1 hour of time, then it's just a farce. So I'm asking you to do the right thing. I'm asking you to really care about the people that are affected. Not just for us, but for other windmill projects that are going in. It does affect people's lives. We did go from a beautiful, peaceful place to a place that is no longer like that for us. It has affected our life, and it continues to affect our life. And I ask that you not allow Antrim Wind Energy to control the SEC. Oh, did you have any... Sorry, did you have any questions?
I didn't do either of the two of you.
No follow-up questions.
Okay. Just curious, in a line of sight, how far is your home from the closest wind?
Closest one is half a mile away, but we have three that we can visibly see.
Three? And you so it's a nice rural area. I grew up in Stoddard next door.
Right. It's a beautiful rural area. Yeah. Acres and acres behind us of absolutely nothing. But. Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right, next, Attorney Brooks.
Thank you. I'm Alan Brooks from the Department of Justice. I actually have nothing more on the sound issue. I've submitted everything that I believe I could add to the conversation. I know that you've carefully read and reviewed that information. I did want to speak to see if I could briefly hijack what we're doing today, just to say the lighting issue is evolving. I'd hoped by this meeting to get information on light from the facility, and I know they're working on it. But just expect that that will be an issue, and you'll see more information on that, and I think we'll all have a significant amount of work to do. So I just wanted to say that publicly so that you could plan on what the next steps might be for this issue. I know that we've gone through the lighting issue once, but I believe, again, there will be a lot more work to do, so I wanted to get that on the record. Really have nothing else on the sound issue.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I have not seen the final report. I don't think it's been submitted to the SEC as yet on the upgrades to the ADL system. And I did see something recently, haven't read it yet, on the Shadow Flicker reports. So both of those things are on our to-do list.
And I appreciate that. The thing that I wanted to make sure was out, and again, I think the facility is working on this, is the raw data. Which is, I think, the easiest to understand, and so therefore the most important, which is essentially when are the lights on and the lights off, and that's kind of the foundation of whether the system is performing or not.
And we understand crystal clear that we expect the lights to be off as more standard. And we've afforded AWE the opportunity to perform their upgrades, and we're waiting to see what the results of those upgrades do as a result.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Tom, did you have any questions?
I didn't.
Department of Justice.
So I function as counsel for the public.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Attorney Brooks, when you said that situation is evolving, can you just give some more detail about what that means and what you envision happening in the next few months?
Yeah, of course. As you know, you're familiar, obviously, with the last recommendation that you made and that the full committee reviewed. In the interim, the facility has been able to give me some data, some raw data, as to when lights are on or off. Not more recently. So the hope is that in August or so, maybe it's performing better than it was before. I don't know because I don't live there. But the data from June and July seems to indicate that on a lot of nights, the lights may be on 44% of the time, 45% of the time, maybe 50% of the time. And I think to me that indicates that we have significant work to do to figure out how to get things where they ought to be. And again, the hope is that this is going to function properly. The hope is that maybe currently or in the very near future, things are going to work out so that the system is functioning in the way everyone anticipated. But that data indicates to me that we have a lot of work to do.
Do you have any position as to what the subcommittee should do to investigate those issues?
My only recommendation is to schedule what you'll need to schedule as soon as you can, to get information as soon as you can, to encourage the facility to provide the information as soon as they can. And that's why I put it on the record today, even though it's not on the agenda, just to be able to plan and know this is coming up. I know the folks who live there have been waiting a long time for what they want to see in terms of a resolution.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Attorney Brooks. Next up would be Lori Lerner.
Materials were sent on Friday, and then this is just my oral testimony with a written copy if it would be helpful to me.
Sure, we can take that.
Good morning.
My name is
Lori Lerner. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on this draft proposal.
Can you hear me okay?
Maybe pull it just a little bit closer.
Yeah. I'd like to use this time to explain and simplify the historical record of this docket. Andrew Wind and its experts have manipulated the very clear record of administrative intent as it pertains to the sound standard, while the subcommittee appears to have chosen to ignore or dismiss the regulatory intent. Given my participation from the very beginning of the SEC rules adoption through to this docket, I'd like to detail the regulatory history and administrative intent leading to the Andrew Wind II order and decision. Per paragraph 49 of the proposal, it states, "The subcommittee believes the administrative history is contradictory and unclear," end quote. This statement is contradicted by paragraph 56, where the rulemaking subcommittee referred to the noise limit several times as a maximum or not to exceed standard, with final statement by Attorney Weissner stating, "This is setting an absolute standard not to be exceeded," end quote. Despite this clear statement and those of Chairman Honigberg and Commissioner Scott, the subcommittee proposal continues to allege in paragraph 57, the subcommittee, this quote, "subcommittee does not consider these statements important indicators of administrative intent," end quote. It does not get any clearer than that. In a deeper dive, the subcommittee, through its proposal paragraph 58, acknowledges and agrees the SEC rules for the sound standard were based on the Andrew Wind 1, the 2012 docket sound standard. Within the order and decision for that project, I quote, "In coming to this conclusion, the subcommittee noted existing standards such as the EPA guidelines and the 1999 WHO guidelines. The subcommittee relied upon the newer 2009 WHO guidelines in establishing a sound level condition." That is all they ever took from the World Health Organization recommendation. That then followed in the order and decision with the necessary conditions outlined as follows. In the daytime, sound levels generated by the facility at the outside facade of residences shall not exceed 45 dBA or 5 dBA above ambient, whichever is greater. It then goes on to say, for the purpose of these conditions, daytime is considered to begin each morning at 8 a.m. and conclude at 8 p.m. All other times shall be considered to be the nighttime. At nighttime, sound levels generated by the facility shall not exceed 40 dBA or 5 dBA above ambient, whichever is greater. The Andrew Wind number 1, the 2012 SEC committee, focused on health as the highest priority in determining the sound limit during the deliberations of the Andrew Wind docket, particularly at night, with an acknowledgement that the Andrew Wind had committed to being able to achieve the shall not exceed standard, as conveyed by these statements by the SEC committee members. This came directly from the transcript during the deliberations of Antrim number 1. Mr. Boyver, "During summer months, the noise was fairly significant so as to bother the sleep and so forth. That will be a problem. But when you take it on an annual average, you would have to have almost a bracket out there. You'd have to have extraordinary high noise levels that everyone would agree would be bad. And when you put that into an annual average, it probably would still end up being below 40. So we could have, say, a six-week period in the summer where, hypothetically, it's very noisy and most reasonable people would agree this is interrupting sleep and it's an annoyance. And it certainly is quite negative. But when you pump the numbers through on the annual average, it wouldn't make any difference. It wouldn't be in violation of what we have approved. And the issue of how you monitor it is separate and difficult, but this could, because, you know, we're buttoned up in the wintertime, make it such that any noise level in the summer, however loud, once you averaged it through, would be below the 40. Ms. Bailey goes on to say, maybe we should go to a standard that says it can't exceed 45 dBA. I mean, Andrew Wind, they have said they can make that. Ms. Bailey then goes on to say, so I think it would be reasonable to adopt a 45 dBA absolute threshold. And that way, we don't have to deal with the annual average issue. Chair Ignatius goes on to say, out of a concern over people's sensitivity about sleep, that over the years there's been a lower level for nighttime. Ms. Lyons goes on with, I just want to be clear that we're trying to set these limits for health. Mr. Boyver goes on, that is the key on the health front. That, if it disturbs someone, raises stress levels, interrupts sleep, that has a health effect. And I think that we're talking about health in this portion of the deliberation, and I think we need to focus on the health part. Ms. Bailey continues, right, if Mr. Tachi's calculations are correct, The ambient sound is around 15 at night. The standard would be 25 dBA. And there's testimony that indicates it would certainly not have any health impact. I think there's testimony that suggests that less than 30 would have no health impact. Chair Ignatius goes on, but another way to do it would be to have a daytime and a nighttime limit, not get into the average over time. Chair Ignatius goes on to say, how about a show of hands would be supportive of a two-step standard, daytime 45 dBA or 5 over ambient, nighttime standard of 40 dBA, 5 over ambient. Show of hands, who would support it? Everyone showed their hands. Any opposed? No indication. Summary. The facts are clear. The FCC rules were promulgated from the Andrew Wind 1 docket, which specifically ruled out any averaging, including the World Health Organization-based annual averaging, and focused specifically on the health impacts. The FCC rule, as defined by Andrew Wind number 1, was carried forward to the Andrew 2 order and decision. The only reference the World Health Organization was for the absolute not to exceed threshold of daytime 45 dBA and nighttime standard of 40 dBA. For paragraph 25, as stated in the order and decision of Andrew Wind 2 docket, Andrew Wind guaranteed that the noise levels associated with the project will not exceed the requirements set forth in the rule. Despite these clear statements of intent, standard, and condition, the proposal in paragraph 57 erroneously goes on to say the subcommittee does not consider these statements important indicators of administrative intent. Again, in proposal 62, I strongly object to the statement the subcommittee does not find this discussion informative on administrative intent. That's a quote. The discussion in the 2012 interim docket is unclear as to whether the subcommittee rejected the WHO's year-long averaging, rejected nighttime averaging, or ruled out any possible averaging of sound levels. For example, adopted an LNAC standard, end quote. The regulatory intent of the FCC rules could not be more clear. The year-long averaging, or any averaging for that matter, was decisively rejected. For an understanding of the impact of averaging, refer to the graphs on page 1 and page 2 of the filing by Rob Rand on July 29th of 2021. These graphs show that any averaging, including 1-minute averaging, will eliminate peak noise impacts which are causing sleep disturbance an annoyance to the neighbors of Antrim Wind. Per the filing of noise expert Robert Rand, 1-minute LNQ averaging hides the dominant loud, modulating wind turbine whooshes and whumps, provoking sleep disruption and complaints. The short-term 0.1-second LNQ levels exceed the New Hampshire SEC night limit of 40 dBA, reaching 43 dBA, 7 dBA higher than the 1-minute LNQ and 10-minute LNQ values. But the 1-minute LNQ barely budges from the 10-minute and stays below the regulatory limit, end quote from Rob Rand. Rather than upholding the FCC rules based on a clear regulatory intent, which never accepted the notion of averaging, the SEC subcommittee has formulated an arbitrary recommendation allowing for at least a 5-minute averaging. This is a significant departure from the SEC rule, which the SEC committee is not authorized to make without instituting the SEC rulemaking process. This recommendation ignores the administrative record on Antrim Wind 1, the SEC rulemaking, Antrim Wind 2, and all prior wind-related documents. In closing, I'd recommend the SEC subcommittee reconsider the recommendation within this proposal to properly reflect the regulatory intent clearly outlined above, which deliberates and dismisses the use of averaging and provides relief to the neighbors of Antrim Wind. If I can, the minute I have left, and I could draw your attention to the graphs contained on Rob Rand's filing. As you see, the blue is the 0.1 second measurements. Within that, you can see the 10 minute and the 1 hour. When you average it, you lose those high impact sounds that the neighbors around Andrew Wind are hearing. The second page, that graph shows a very similar thing, but this one goes down to 1 minute. And you can see that the 1 minute line isn't an improvement either. The only way to get the actual sound to be reflective of what the Antrim Wind neighbors are hearing is to do the, as stated in the rules, the 1/8 of a second. That is more of an instantaneous sound measurement that was the expectation when Antrim Wind had been approved. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here today. Are there any questions?
I don't have any questions at this time. How about you, John?
I'm going to hear the rest of the testimony and might get back to this point and call it back at the end.
Yep.
Sure.
That makes
Thank
sense.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Turner.
Thank you.
All right, next up, Lisa Lanoz.
Thank you. You can hear me, right?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Lisa Lanoz. I'm a resident of the town of Lyman, New Hampshire. I have over 20 years of experience in land use issues and nearly 20 years of experience in wind turbine siting issues. As you are aware, I moderated the SB 99 stakeholder process that ultimately drafted Site 30118. I reviewed the subcommittee's proposal and filed joint comments with others on July 29th and August 13th. Bottom line, if the subcommittee's draft proposal is adopted, you will gut the FCC limits on turbine noise, hand compliance authority to self-interested parties, and condemn the neighbors to live with dominant wish-wants that provoke sleep disruption and complaints. Such a change would be dramatic, unjustifiable departure from the FCC's precedent for managing turbine noise. There is no possible reading of the SEC precedent or rulemaking record that supports such an outcome. So how did you get to this point? Our comments detail fatal errors in the subcommittee's proposal, each of which can be traced to deliberate misrepresentations by Antrim Wind. The subcommittee used Antrim Wind's July 1 memo as its blueprint for the proposal, and it shows. I summarized several of the most egregious misrepresentations today. The first and most basic is Antrim Wind's statement that the 1/8 second interval for LEQ defined in 30118 is inconsistent with the ANSI standard. This is false. In fact, all measurements cited in the ANSI standard are based on a 1/10 second LEQ, which is even shorter than the 1/8 second. Antrim Wind's claim that the 1/8 second in the rules is a meter setting is an irrelevant distinction. The fact is, the SEC rules require a 1/8 second LEQ. Second, Antrim Wind states that the basic measurement period defined in the ANSI standard should be the LEQ compliance interval for the SEC rules. This is patently false and a gross misapplication of the standard. The basic measurement period is the planned duration and time of occurrence in a day, day of week, or time of year for measuring sound from a source. For example, an air conditioning unit, if you're measuring the sound, you're obviously going to measure when the turbines, when the air conditioner is making noise and operating. The basic measurement period has nothing to do with the SEC's regulatory authority over turbine sound and its LEQ compliance interval. Third, to support its claim of inconsistency, Antrim Wind draws a subcommittee into the particulars of removing transient noise from the measurement period and how measurement period can be no shorter than 1 minute, one second rather. The subcommittee uncritically repeats Antrim Wind's claim that, quote, removal of transient background noises would be impossible under the ANSI standard using a 1/8 second measurement period. This statement is ridiculous. Okay, the LEQ compliance interval of 1/8 second is entirely independent of the process of removing transient sounds. If you're going to delve into the standard, it's imperative you understand what you're reading. Your proposal is based on Antrim's claim, and the claim is wrong. Fourth, Antrim Wind states that the 30118E6 is impossible to use within the context of the SEC rules because calculating L10 and L90 from 1/8 second measurements is impossible. Here, Antrim Wind misrepresents the SEC rules in hopes of confusing you, and it works. The language of 30118E6 is clear in stating that the 1/8 second compliance interval applies to sound measurements during post-construction monitoring. L10 and L90 are not sound measurements. They are statistical values. The SEC rules do not specify the time period for computing L10 and L90 values and relies on the knowledge of the tester to get this right. Fifth, regarding the shall not exceed standards in other jurisdictions, the subcommittee states that Antrim Wind, quote, submitted materials showing that jurisdictions adopting a 45 dB LMAX standard have permitted no wind energy facilities. But the subcommittee never bothered to look at the information Antrim Wind submitted in its July 1 Attachment G. Had you read Antrim's Attachment G, you would know it contained a mishmash of not-to-exceed standards that differed materially from the SEC standard in terms of sound limits in decibels and measurement location, among others. While the subcommittee did not vet the information received by Antrim Wind, there is no excuse for the subcommittee to repeat Antrim Wind's statement without at least confirming the claim matched the data submitted. Finally, Antrim Wind's sixth and most deceptive claim that the SEC accepted the one-hour LEQ approach at the time the project was certificated and that concerns were never raised by interveners or others is absolutely false. As proof, Antrim Wind points to its pre-construction monitoring, which is based on one-hour averaging. However, the method for measuring background sound levels is not relevant to the SEC's mandated operational sound levels, which in the rules is 1/8 second. If Antrim Wind is claiming that its predictive modeling is assumed one-hour averaging, I would defy anyone in this room to show me in Mr. O'Neill's 2016 sound assessment where it states all predictive model results are based on LEQ 1 hour. It doesn't. Mr. O'Neill worked extra hard to avoid any mention of an hourly LEQ in his 2016 report and his written and oral testimony. The only claim Mr. O'Neill made repeatedly was that sound would not exceed the 4540 dBA levels with no mention of a time period. However, at one point, Mr. O'Neill did make a passing mention of the one-hour LEQ on cross-examination when he was being crossed by Attorney Iacopino. And he was immediately challenged and reminded the standard was not an LEQ one-hour metric. He backed down. When Attorney Needleman later tried to rehabilitate his witness, Mr. O'Neill made a brief reference to a Massachusetts report, and they never raised the 1 hour again. If there was a question Mr. O'Neill and Antrim Wind were obliged to ask for confirmation of the noise standard, instead they went silent. The reality is that Antrim Wind has been deceiving the SEC and the public, and in doing so brought this issue upon itself and unfairly created a crisis for the SEC. Mr. O'Neill and Antrim Wind were well aware of the SEC's noise standard established in 2015 and the SEC's precedent of shall not exceed in Leemster, Groton, and Antrim Wind 1, the applications leading up to the 2015 rules. It is Antrim Wind that has now been caught trying to play games with sound monitoring, and it now seems we have a pattern. Recall on June 17th, Mr. Needleman told this subcommittee that Mr. O'Neill's post-construction sound survey at Groton Wind used an LEQ 10-minute compliance interval. I checked Mr. O'Neill's report and confirmed this to be the case. This means that Mr. O'Neill defied the SEC shall not exceed sound limit imposed on the SEC Groton order. So let's be clear. Mr. O'Neill applied a 10-minute compliance interval where shall not exceed standard was mandated in Groton. And now Mr. O'Neill advises Antrim Wind that it could get away with a one-hour LEQ where 1/8 second interval is mandated. And when challenged, blame the neighbors for not knowing the rules. The turbines at Antrim Wind are much closer to the neighboring properties and much larger than those cited at Groton. The noise impact is more pronounced and the neighbor complaints will continue. And look at Rob Brand's report to see why. In closing, this one final fact. Once you get past Antrim Wind's misrepresentations and try and understand the SEC rules as they are constructed, including the 1/8 second compliance interval, all aspects of the rules fall into place and are fully consistent with the ANSI standard and the SEC's pre-2015 decisions. In contrast, the subcommittee proposal is contrived, based on faulty constructs, assumes non-existing support in the ANSI standard, requires you to dismiss the entire past history of the SEC relative to turbine noise, and avoids any public health component. The subcommittee's proposal makes no sense. It should be withdrawn, and the subcommittee convene a meeting of all parties to discuss the issue openly and honestly. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I did have one question. I guess what you said about the measurements, not like L90 and L10 not being measurements, and I guess that confuses me a little bit, and I'm trying to figure out why your reasoning behind that. And
it's not my reasoning. It's a fact. And Mr. O'Neill can confirm this. He even states it it's even stated in the answer memo, that they are statistical calculations. You collect the data, and then you can perform a statistical calculation on that information. It's simply percentiles.
So why is the L90, that's in the rules.
That's correct.
It's mentioned in the rules, so why is it there if it's not for, what would it be there for?
Well, the fact that it's being asked to be reported, that the complaint that's put forth by Andrew Nguyen is that you cannot arrive at an L90 with a measurement of 1/8 second, when you take the measurements in 1/8 second, a measurement period of 1/8 second is impossible to do an L90. I don't argue that. I don't complain about that. I have no issue with that. What I'm saying is that the rule says the measurements, literally when you're taking measurements of sound, LEQ or LFAS, that's where the 1/8 second applies. Those are measurements. L90 and L10, it's really important you understand this. L90 and L10 are not measurements. They are statistical values. You collect the data, and then you can determine the 90th percent. What the L90 is, all sounds are quieter than 90% of all the sounds in the environment. And 10%. So you could have an L10, you could have L90, you could have L50, all sorts of percentiles in where you're doing an analysis on the sound. But those are not measurements. Those are post-construction, post-data that you're applying statistical analysis on. They're not collected in 1/8 second. The 1/8 second doesn't apply to them. That's the point. The 1/8 second applies to the LEQ. That's a measurement. I could point out exactly in Andrew Nguyen's memo where they make the point. If you look up anywhere, it says, it will explain that those are not measurements.
Well, arguably, wouldn't an LEQ also be processing little pieces of data? That
LEQ is actual measurement taken off the meter. It is a measurement. And if you look at the standard, it says that measurements are taken in these 1/10 second. Measurements, literal measurements off the meter, 1/10 second or LFAS. Please, I am not going to educate you on LFAS. I'm not able to educate you on L10 or L90 today, but you are making a determination for what a rule says, and if you don't understand what that means, you have to first understand what all of these L10, L90, LEQ mean before you can make a determination of what the rule says. I don't mean to be disrespectful. I don't mean that. I'm just saying that this came up at the June 6th, 17th meeting, and we obviously came up with a proposal. You have to understand what the underlying issues are. But the fact that the rule asks that the L10 and L90 be reported, that is additional information being made available as part of the post-construction monitoring. But the standard that has to be met is an LEQ 1/8 second, not to exceed. And that's what we're focused on today, or in the proposal. And you're looking to go to an LEQ 5 minute. No. So that's problematic.
Anybody else?
Well, Ms. Linoz, I guess I have at least one question. L90, that's used to set background ambient sound, right?
Correct.
And in any of the reports that I've seen, I don't know if that's set the L90 standard with the data that's given to us, because it's a greater standard, right? It's 40 or 45 or ambient plus 5, which right. is greater. So you can have high peaks. It depends what the ambient sound is at the time. And we know that there's different ambient sounds, summer, peepers, whatever, road noise, and nighttime. So it's hard for me to say that there's a violation because they violated a maximum peak, let's say, at night, you know, say they hit 45, right? If background noise at L90 at that period was, you know, 35 at the time, because 35 plus 5 is 40, it wouldn't be a violation, it's what it was greater type of thing. So, you know, it's hard based on the data for me to conclude that there's an actual violation given the way the rule's written.
You're confused by what the rule says. And you actually explain in your own proposal what the rule says. So what it says is it has two components to it. It has a not-to-exceed component, which is the 45-day, 48-night, LEQ 1/8 second. That's one component. The second component is a relative component, which means that 5 decibels above background when measured at the L90 level. The L90 level in Antrim, the town of Antrim, at night has been measured in the teens. The L90 in the teens. It is some of the quietest area around. Not many people have the option to live in a place like that. So that is what's called the residual sound. So all other noises are removed. Insects are removed. So the rule actually requires that all high-frequency sounds be removed. Insects, peepers, those kinds of things, as well as any transient noise, which are the trucks driving by. So ultimately, when you remove all other noise but the lowest, quietest 10%, what you're left with is that 15-20 decibel noise level. The expectation in the wind project is that most of the noise is going into our night, the loudest, because Dr. Warfield talked about meteorological conditions. Okay? When you're in a condition like that, it is a very, very certain that the noise level, the L90, is going to be somewhere down, certainly below 25 decibels. Anytime, if you're going to add 5 decibels to that, 30. That what I'm saying is that relative component of the sound standard is not going to be the driving component. It's the 45-40 that will be the driving components at night of the 40. Does that make sense?
So you're telling me that the say the maximum ambient sound level is 25, right? So
I'm careful. It's not ambient. It's background measured at the L90.
So the maximum that you think of that compliance point would be 30 decibels, right? So let's say they could still operate at 40 at night and be in compliance with the rule, correct?
Right, at night it's not to exceed 40 LEQ.
So that would be a 10 decibel increase. And if memory serves me right, the WHO guidance says that 5, you could get a disturbance and 10 decibel change above background would be disturbing. So, I mean, the rule is written, you know, that we have to interpret and then enforce provides, I believe, an ability to create a disturbance. Now, does a disturbance equate to a health effect? Because it's health and safety, I believe, that the full committee was looking at to set the standard. And they set the standard at 45 during the day and 40 at night.
That is correct.
Based on health, right?
Correct.
Okay. But there still might be a disturbance to the public based on a 10 decibel potential change from what you're used to what might happen.
Now, we're not worried about that.
This was kind of wrestling around in my mind.
I understand that. We're not worrying about that. Because the SEC had made a determination, again, SEC, in all of its prior decisions before the rulemaking, it made a determination that 40 at night, or it had a decibel level at night, let's say Antrim 1, 40 at night, not to exceed. And so be it. If it's L90 at night of only 15, and yes, you're right, that's a big delta between 15 and 40. But the 40 is a reasonable sound level, not to exceed. Okay, that's John Magazine. It's a reasonable level that's not going to keep people awake at night. It's going to be noise, so it's not going to be as quiet and as awesome as it was before the project was built. No one said the turbines are going to be inaudible. They're going to make noise, and people are going to hear it. Who says, yeah, I'm going to disturb people? But 40, people can live with that. That's livable. You can sleep with that. When you start getting into 43, 44, 45, 53, which was measured by Rob Rand, and a whomping sound, because you see it's highly fluctuating, that's what disturbs people. That's what drives people out of the home. So when you have a not-to-exceed standard of 40, the reality is the turbines are operating lower than that. Because if you're looking at a sound that's fluctuating between 6 and 11 decibels with each womp, it can't go over 40. That means it has to be sitting around somewhere around 35, generally. So it's people have been maybe bothered by it, but it's not going to cause sleep disruption. Not like what we'll see when we go way over 40. Does that answer your question? So I would worry. So I understand what you're saying. I mean, if I could just take off the not to exceed 5 decibels above the background measured at the L90 level. That part of the rule is never going to come into play in Antrim. It's never going to come because the turbines are louder than that and the background noise level is always going to be quieter than that. So, quieter than 40. So, anyway, the 40 is not going to be a problem for people. The not to exceed 40. A 40 LEQ an hour, that's a different thing. Or even 5 minutes.
Yeah, and your written submittal agreed with at least part one and part two of our recommendation to the full committee. And it's really the time interval that you had the biggest issue with, right?
Yes, that is
and
true.
That's a biggest struggle for us as well. And for how do we apply that rule that talks about a LAEQ and a not to exceed, and why it wasn't established as an LMAX standard, which we talked about at the last public hearing. Any thoughts
yes.
on that?
The reason it went with an equivalent standard, an LEQ standard, as opposed to an LMAX, and this is a little bit historic, back in 2014, 2015, around the time when the rules were being developed, and when we were going through the SB 99 process, the wind industry had made a lot of claims in other places that shall not exceed standards, that they could not, that made no sense. You can't have this idea of not reaching, they argued that it couldn't be done, that it didn't make sense. And so they literally wrote a memo to in one case in Michigan, that case that only you don't want to look at. There was a case in Michigan where they went to court. They said the town had a shall not exceed standard. The wind company said you can't do it; it's impossible. So they went to court and argued that case that it was an LMAX standard, a legitimate standard, and the courts ruled that LMAX was a reasonable standard. But we wanted to avoid that fight here. We didn't want to get into the fight of LMAX isn't a legitimate standard, or it's really a shall not exceed standard. So we said, well, okay, we'll do equivalent. And we'll do equivalent that would as closely match a shall not exceed but not be one. So there wouldn't be doubt. And here we are, like fighting over it.
Yeah.
That was the reason we were trying to avoid a case of a shall not exceed was not legitimate. Maybe we should have picked 1 second instead of 1/8 second back then. But
believe the testimony from Mr. O'Neill was I asked him the question, is LMAX equivalent to LAAQ at 0.125? And he said, yes. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I think that it's essentially the same, but it's functionally the same. But the difference being to that we did not have an LMAX standard. The state of New Hampshire, SEC, did not have an LMAX standard on LEMS or Groton or Angel. That was a shall not exceed. It's not the same thing. LMAX requires that you put a time frame on it. Whenever you have L in there, LMAX, L something, LQ, there's a time frame associated with it. So we said, well, we're not even going to go there with LMAX and go with an LEQ and put a time frame on it, which is behind the second.
Okay. One other thing, last question, hopefully just get the hook over there, was we go back to 301.14F2, and that's the compliance paragraph that we're looking at. It says, respect to sound standards, the A-weighted equivalent sound level. Do you believe that means LAEQ?
Correct, the word equivalent.
Okay. And shall not exceed. Now, if you have an LAEQ, that usually comes with an LAEQ
time frame.
Right?
Yes.
But I don't see one here, and that's what we're struggling with.
I know.
We have the measurement period of how they have to do their post-construction measurements, but I don't have a compliance time here.
And that
we talked last time, and we said that, you know, the 0.125 appears unreasonable. An hour isn't set in the standard either. So, I mean, that's quite a gap. What do you think is reasonable?
Look, I'm not going to say what's reasonable. I'm going to say what the rules say. The law and the rule right now is the way it's constructed. The 1/8 second should have been put in 301.14. It should have been there. The way the rule was constructed was we had the standard equivalent 4540, but then the process and the timing and all of the issues governing that were put in 301.18. 301.18 and 301.14F2A are intrinsically connected. You can't separate them. And that's, if I were to write it again, or if the SEC went through a rulemaking on this, I would strongly encourage them to correct that. But the only place within the rules where an LEQ metric, time frame, is defined is in 301.18E6. It's there. And it's very, that there's an effort by Andrew Wynn to pretend it's not there or discard it or somehow change its meaning, but it's, can't deny it's there, and that is a time interval that was intended.
Right. Well, they provide their measurements, you know, fast response and LAQ at 0.125, so they meet that standard the way I understand it, and the compliance standard 301.14F2 doesn't state that, so that's been problem. I mean, we've been directed to interpret the rule as written and just focus on New Hampshire's laws and rules and not bring any other state or any other issue into it. So we've been struggling with that. That's been difficult. I also saw in the original construct of 301.14F2 to be a 3-minute time period. And the record that I read, that was struck, and I see no discussion in the record on that. And I think the full committee struggled to come up with a standard. And, you know, we've been directed to say, what does this say? And I'm struggling with that personally. And I understand, you know, both sides here. Because whatever's decided at the end, the facility that's built has to meet a new standard, maybe, or a new interpretation of the standard. And public, you know, believes that it wouldn't be disturbed from the turbines. So it's a tough balance. It's hard to be.
I'm sorry, this is to quote, you're not in a rulemaking role right now.
correct.
And
an interpretive role of the existing rule.
That is correct. And the administrative record, I know that it is disturbing to see how much the subcommittee dismissed it, but the recommendation as it stands right now is you are recommending the SEC go from a shall not exceed standard to an LEQ 5 minute or greater and hand that authority over to the person who's doing the test. That is such a, if you look at the Rob Rand's graph, that is an extreme change. And that the SEC rulemaking committee never intended that. There is no way you can look at the record and say that we're going to go from a shall not exceed to a whatever you want to do standard, because that's what it is. And the effect of that is all of those blue lines that go over the 40 decibel, gone. And the committee will receive a report from Antrim Wind saying we're in compliance, we're under 40 LEQ 1 hour, and you have Barbara Berwick and others suffering through 53 decibel peaks. That, there's no way to look at the data and look at the record and say that's what the committee intends. The committee intended all along to replicate as close as possible the shall not exceed standard. That's what it intended. And that's what the rule says. And to come in and try to find something in the ANSI standard or somewhere else, I'm confused by where you're going there, because the rule is clear. And no one's saying, well, Antrim Wind now has to accept a more difficult standard. No, Antrim Wind knew what the rules were back in 2015. If they didn't, I don't know what they were thinking. If they didn't understand it, if they said, okay, it's 1 hour, and never said it, like I said, it's nowhere in the record. The 1 hour LEQ, that blows me away. Because if that had come up during the adjudicative hearing, other than the one time when he was challenged and backed down, I think we would have sat there and said, oh yeah, LEQ 1 hour, that's what we always meant. No. That's not what it is. So you're not, I guess I don't understand why this subcommittee feels like it has to make everyone happy. Look at the rules, look at the regulatory and administrative intent, and the rule's pretty clear, in my opinion. It's pretty clear. Granted, it should have been 3114, but the LEQ standard is 1 second. I'm sorry for talking to you. I'm very passionate about this.
Thank you for taking the time. I have no further questions.
One quick question. What do you interpret the rules as saying the meter response should be? Should it be fast, slow, instantaneous?
Frankly, the fast is kind of irrelevant. It really should be the LEQ 1 second.
That's a fast. But
No, those are two different things. LEQ 1 second. LEQ 1 second is not the same as how fast. They're two different things. And Rob Rand submitted a letter on June 29th, I think is when we did. I forgot what it was, but I believe it was June 29th, where he explains how the meter works.
Yep.
But the LFAS, it's really the LEQ is what my focus is on for the compliance interval.
Okay, so you're just so I'm understanding what you're saying, you don't believe the rules specifically indicate whether it's fast, slow, instantaneous.
Well, it does say L fast. It says it's LEQ 1/8 second and L fast. So they can do both. But with regard to the compliance interval, LEQ compliance interval is the 1/8 second. And the 1/8 second LEQ can be read directly off the meter. It can be calculated as well from the LFAS.
All right.
Could I ask a couple questions?
Absolutely.
Ms. Leno, I'm going to focus on paragraph 46 of the proposed recommendation.
Sorry, I don't have any problem.
Yeah, no, I'll read it to you. So
It says, furthermore, removal of transient background noises would be impossible under the ANSI standard using a basic measurement period of 0.125 seconds. That's the first sentence. And I read in your testimony, and heard it today, that you don't agree with that statement, I take it?
Correct. That's correct.
Why is that?
So what the standard says, then, is that it says you go in and collect the data at 1 cent second LEQ, and then you, over a period of time, okay? Our focus for the metric here is the 1 second. That's the LEQ compliance interval. But when you have to remove transient data from a study, a data collected, you collect it in 1/10 second, and then you collect a series of 1/10 seconds. And then you listen to that data. You listen to an audio recording. And anywhere that you, and it could be, the basic measurement period could be 20 minutes, it could be 1 hour, could be whatever it is. And you look at successive LEQ 1/10 seconds. Then you listen audio, and you, wherever you hear a sound that's transient, like a car pass, dog bark, aircraft, whatever, you bracket off those 1/10 LEQs, and delete it from the data, and then concatenate the data back together. So that measurement period that we're talking about, that is not the 1/10 second or 1/8 second. That is just any amount that I collected data for half an hour, and now you've got all this data, and it's all successive 1/10 second LEQs. Listen to it, throw out the data that's contaminated, concatenate it together, and now maybe you're left with 20 minutes out of 30 minutes or whatever. So the basic measurement, what Andrew Nguyen said, is that the basic measurement period, the time that you're out there collecting the 30 minutes worth of data, that's the LEQ compliance interval. That makes no sense. And you can't split the LEQ 1/10 second. We're not trying to do that either. So basically, I collected data for 10 minutes, I have successive 1/10 seconds, I've deleted out the data where there's transient noises, and I'm left with data. But that does not negate the fact that my LEQ compliance interval is 1/8 second. I've just got 10 minutes worth of it.
How should the subcommittee interpret the ANSI standards instructions to separate the basic measurement period into 1 second blocks? How does that affect?
Yeah, so it says that the minimum basic measurement period can be when you're deleting transient data should not be less than 1 second, which is fine. Mostly when your car passed by, it usually takes more than a second for that to happen. So you want a certain level of granularity. So that you don't, if you had a minute, like if you were looking at blocks of a minute or 5 minutes, whatever, you'd be throwing out all sorts of good data because that was the minimum amount of time. But that 1 second again has nothing to do with it. Maybe I should explain it this way. When you go out and do a noise study, you go out and collect an hour's worth of data, bearing in mind that the Part 3 standard is an intended measurement, so you're out there for some amount of time, but not extended period of time. So you're out there for an hour. You collect an hour's worth of 1/10 second LEQs. And now, before you make any determination as to whether or not that data you collected is compliant with, say, the SEC standard, you have to first pull out any contaminated data. So you're working with this data independent of some compliance regulation you have to, or ordinance you have to meet. You go in and you just go and you just delete out data that's not turbine noise or not, there's anything but the noise source you're trying to test. And then when you're done, that's when you compute. That's when you get your LEQ. And that LEQ can be computed based on a 1/10 second, it could be a 1/8 second, it could be a 1 hour, it could be a 5 minute. The LEQ that we're talking about here for compliance is that's calculated after all of the data processing is done. So whether you're deleting data out of a 1 second increments or whatever, that's all data processing done to get rid of transient noise. And so somehow it's all been conflated into this same thing with the compliance. That's part of the compliance interval. It's not.
So what's your understanding of what should happen? So after you throw out the 1 second blocks of bad data that are corrupted by transient noise, what happens under the ANSI standard with those remaining 1 second blocks of transient noise?
Okay, so actually,
the good blocks, not the transient noise.
So what I would do is, if I could draw your attention to the graph here, Rob Ran collected 1 10-second LLC data, and he did two things when he processed this data. The first thing he did was eliminate any noises that were greater than 1250 hertz. So that got rid of peepers, insects, and things like that, because the rule says you get rid of those or not. And then the next thing he did was he listened to the audio recordings, or high-quality wave recordings. So this was an unintended test. He was not the owner. He listened to the audio recording, and wherever there was a car lot pass by or aircraft flyover or whatever, he deleted that data. So then what was left? 1 10-second data. The blue.
No, but I was asking more about the ANSI standard, because the subcommittee's proposals says that the ANSI standard envisions that the many 1 second blocks not corrupted by transient noises will be averaged into a longer time frame LEQ.
Or not. The standard could be left at 1 10-second. It could be average. It doesn't specify anything. It just said that it has an equation in the standard that allows for it to be into some LEQ in the end, LEQ X time frame. That LEQ X time frame is not defined in the standard. That is
the difficulty I'm having understanding it. Is that the ANSI standard says the equivalent continued sound pressure levels for the remaining good blocks, which are 1 second long, shall be averaged. So I'm having trouble understanding how you can average a bunch of 1 second blocks but still use an LAEQ of 0.125.
Okay, so it would be a really good idea to hire an acoustician. You're asking me to explain to you how the standard works in terms of what its recommendation is in terms of removing transient data, and I'm telling you that technical process of removing data that's contaminating the source you're testing is so in the weeds right now, and that is not. None of that is discussing what the ordinance is that you heard is the rule that the tester is testing against, or not. I mean, if someone goes out and does a test, they may or may not be doing it for the purposes of meeting a standard, an ordinance. But it says that, but it's not. You really need to talk to an acoustician, because it's so in the weeds right now where you are, and you're looking for something in the standard that is...
That's fair enough. That's fine. I just wanted to get your position. I only have one more question, which is there's a recommendation on paragraph 84 about how the subcommittee should do its investigation going forward. Do you have any position on that?
Yes. One of the things that has been very concerning for me is that when Mr. Tachi went out and did a post-construction test on at one of the two of the properties on Car Hill Road in Hampton. The way the rule is written is that it says that you have to meet the same meteorological conditions under which the complaints occur. That I think Barbara Bullock suggested this too. That is next to impossible to do, and because and Dr. Ward can tell you why. And what I would recommend, if complaints do come out, I would highly recommend that a monitor be put out at the site where the complaints were made and leave it out there for a week and a half. I guarantee you within a week and a half, the turbine is going to make a noise and it's going to be unbearable, and let the complainant complain at that point. Then you will have coincident complaint with data collected, and then the analysis can be done. I know that the rule says it has to be done under the same meteorological conditions, but the rule does not say that you have to recreate those meteorological conditions. It says a field test be done. I think I highly recommend that in order to get a real test, a monitor be out there for about a week and a half. It's a validate using this mechanism. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. I think I'm all set. You gentlemen all set?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right. I believe next is Attorney Barry Needleman.
Morning. I'll
Morning.
Just speak for a couple of minutes
sure.
on process issues, and then let Mr. O'Neill speak to technical
sure.
issues, which I imagine you're more interested in. Let me start, Mr. Turner, with what you asked a moment ago. How do you reconcile this 1/8 of a second measurement with the averaging? And Ms. Linoz couldn't answer it and said you really need an acoustical expert. I think that tells you everything you need to know. You don't need an acoustical expert. It just doesn't make any sense. You can't make 1/8 of a second fit into these rules and make sense. And I think that's, in essence, the end of that inquiry. Mr. Duclo, you asked a little while ago, how do we go about the interpretive process here? I mean, you hit on the core of the issue. That's your job, right? I think you did your job exactly the way you were supposed to do it. As I look at the report you wrote, what I see is a thorough review of the law, a thorough review of the administrative rules, a thorough review of Antrim Wind's certificate, looking at the relevant filings, and looking at the public comment. You take all that, you synthesize it together, and you say, what do we have here, and what is the logical interpretation consistent with all of that? And I don't think you missed anything. And I think you've got the right interpretation given what you were supposed to look at and given the materials you had before you. I am still a little bit perplexed about why we're talking about the issue of shall not exceed. We acknowledged on page 32 of our initial filing that it's a shall not exceed standard. So I think we all agree with that. I think the question is, again, how do we measure that shall not exceed standard? The opponents here say it's 1/8 of a second. The committee said, no, that's not right. He said, quote, a 1/8 of a second compliance interval is inconsistent with the committee rules. I think you're correct about that, and I think you did a pretty thorough analysis to get to the point where you could make that kind of statement. Conversely, the other question is, well, if it's not 1/8 of a second, what is it? And you concluded, well, it's not necessarily an hour, but an hour is reasonable given the ANSI standards, and it could be as little as I think you said, 5 minutes or something more. That's fine. We accept that. We think, and it's in a sense, it's not really our place to accept it. I think the real question is, what does the law, what conclusion does the law lead you to? What conclusion does the law compel? And when you look at the totality of the materials before you, when you look at the ANSI standards, when you look at how other professionals have done this, it all leads you to the place where you ended up. And I guess I'll summarize by saying that it's I find it disappointing that we're at a place where people are disparaging Antrim Wind and making it sound like this is Antrim Wind's novel interpretation of these rules at the 11th hour. It's far from that. And look no further than the work that Mr. Tochi did, who is an independent expert hired by the Site Evaluation Committee to do this evaluation. And that independent expert used that same measurement period. So I could go on about all the other sources out there that lead one to the conclusion that you got this right. But this is most certainly not an Antrim Wind issue. This is an issue of how do professionals do this? How do they measure these things? What do the ANSI rules say? And when you look at all of that, it leads you to the place where you ended up. So that's really all I have to say. I think if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll let Mr. O'Neill come up.
I don't have any questions.
Yes, I just have one. I think you stated what's going on, at least in my mind, on this. All the pre-construction monitoring that was done were based on 1 hour averaging, right?
That's my understanding.
Was there ever any type of comment? I didn't find it anyway, about that being the standard or not being the standard. That's just what was submitted to figure out what the maximum decibels would come out from the facility, right?
Yeah, I think Mr. O'Neill can probably speak more specifically to that piece. Yeah. I would say somebody, I think it was Ms. Linoz, mentioned that, our failure to call out and reject the 1/8 of a second during the course of the proceeding is somehow, an indictment against us. I don't understand how anyone could make that argument. I mean, what you're essentially saying is the applicant should have anticipated that somebody would be coming up with this extraordinarily novel approach to these rules and then affirmatively rejecting it as part of the proceeding. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Rules to us were clear during the proceeding. It's exactly what you concluded here, and that's how we were proceeding.
I could go back in the rulemaking discussions and testimony, and I believe it was discussed that the 1/8 of a second was only discussed in the monitoring side. It was the only place that was discussed. When they came up with a draft rule on the 3 minutes, I was surprised that they didn't have any discussion about that, because that was setting a compliance standard. Do you have any recollection of what Antrim's Wind's thoughts on the draft rulemaking was? Did you opine on the 3 minute at all and saying that it should be a different standard? Because that's going to set us a compliance standard, whatever the rule was. It wasn't there at 3 minutes and then it was gone, and I didn't find any discussion anywhere. But I figured if Antrim Wind was going to be the party that had to comply with that rule, I really want to know what that rule stated. Because there was discussion from the committee that said, we don't want to set a standard that they can't meet. Otherwise, we might as well deny their permit outright. So it had to be some type of a standard, I would think, if they allowed you a certificate of site and facility to build it. It had to be something that you thought you could meet. Right? That's my logic anyway. So I'm a little lost in that area.
I don't think anybody here thinks the rulemaking record is perfect. Certainly the notion that if you want to set a standard, you can't meet, deny the permit, I think that's a logical thing to think about, and that would be a 1/8 of a second standard, certainly. I don't have any recollection of Antrim Wind taking positions on that, and honestly, I think you're confined to the administrative record as it exists. So even if I had a recollection, I'm not sure it would be fair for me to inject that into this. And then second of all, I think you should probably give some careful thought to exactly how much weight you put on that imperfect administrative record. And your attorneys can, help you with that. I think there's a law that governs the extent to which you can rely on administrative records like that. But I would say, in the end, yes, you have a rule that doesn't have that specified compliance period in it. And as you pointed out, that creates a challenge for you. But you have methods available to fill that hole. Those methods are looking at the totality of the rule and asking what makes sense in that context, looking at the ANSI standards upon which the rule is based, and then conversely, looking at interpretations that are being offered to fill that hole and whether they make sense or not in the context of the entire rule and the rest of that record.
No further questions.
Thank you.
Can I just ask one?
Sure.
Newman, do you have any comments on paragraph 84, which is the recommendation as to the appropriate procedure for validating noise complaints?
No, not at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. The facility had asked to also have Rob O'Neill from Epsilon speak.
Good morning, members of the subcommittee.
Good morning.
How's that?
Perfect.
Okay. Again, Rob O'Neill from Epsilon Associates. I'm on the clock, so keep moving here. So, thank you for letting me speak for a few minutes this morning to you. I think you did a thorough job looking at all the information in the record and making a recommendation and trying to strike that balance between landowners and developers. I'm just going to make some brief comments and then sort of take whatever questions you might have. There were several comment letters submitted in response to the DAC, one of them by Mr. Stephen Ambrose, who made an implication that has nothing to do with this proceeding, but I take grave offense to it. So I'm going to go on the record and say I sort of resent the implication that he made in that letter that I'm somehow stifling opposition to wind energy and acoustics in my my role in a professional noise subcommittee that I serve on. There's no record of that. That's patently false, and I'm not sure where it came from. So I'm just putting that out there because I couldn't let that lie. He also claims that compliance is determined from the dominant sound measurement without adjustments. Well, that's just not true. You do make the adjustments, as Ms. Lindeau says, and as your rules say, you remove extraneous sound as appropriate according to the ANSI standard. Mr. Rand had a comment letter largely really similar to what went in previously to that in June. It was really the same discussion of the sampling rate versus the compliance time period, which is really what we're here talking about. I think that's I didn't see anything new in there, so I'm not going to comment on that. Ms. Lenoz had some comments in there. One of them was she called out the WHO guidelines, of which there are several. There's a 1999 guideline. That was referenced and discussed pretty extensively in the white paper that I helped write and submit to this committee back in July. And again, it's worth emphasizing that the World Health Organization has a 45 dBA nighttime guideline in there to prevent sleep disturbance, and that's an 8-hour LEQ time period. So again, 8-hour LEQ. And so I'm going to suggest that what New Hampshire SCC has proposed is much more stringent than that. First of all, you're 40 at night, not 45, and you've got a shorter time period, which is your recommendation was at least 5 minutes. It could be 10 minutes, could be an hour, but anyway, it's much shorter than that. The WHO 2009 was also mentioned this morning, again, for historical context. And it's important to remember that WHO 2009 guideline recommendation of 40 decibels was an annual number, and I think that conversation was recounted accurately. It's an annual number, so it takes sound over the entire course of the year, every night of the year. I just want to make sure the definition is clear out there. But again, it's not really relevant for the standard that you're looking at today. There was a statement in Ms. Lindeau's testimony that you got confused in paragraphs 43 and 44 of your recommendation. I don't see it that way. To me, that was a clear restatement of the ANSI standard. That didn't seem confusing to me at all. The comment that the LA-10, LA-90, LC-10, LC-90, we've been talking about that a little bit today, the comment that those are not based on sound measurements is incorrect. Those data are certainly based on sound measurement data. There's no other way to get that information. Those are statistics. You can have an L10 for a one-minute period, a 10-minute period, a one-hour period. Again, it's over some defined period. And again, the SEC rules are very clear in 301.18, where it talks about the post-construction testing, where it says in subsection G, for each sound measurement period during post-construction monitoring, reports include LEQ, L10, L90. So again, there's that sound measurement period that we've been talking about, and the sound measurement period is not defined anywhere, but it's certainly not an eighth of a second. That's the sampling rate. That's not the sound measurement period. It doesn't say anywhere in there that the compliance interval is an eighth of a second. It says the sound measurements should be taken in eighth of a second intervals, but that's not the compliance time period. You couldn't have a sound measurement period and generate an L10 and L90 with an eighth of a second. That was your compliance period. It's just not possible. Finally, the FCC rules do not specify the second, and they never have, even in previous proceedings where these shall not exceed. Again, the standard that the rules could say a wind facility is limited to 45 decibels a day and 40 at night. To me, I would read that the same way as shall not exceed. If you're limited to a certain number, you can't go over. Shall not exceed means the same thing. I think we're coming to an agreement that shall not exceed doesn't mean an L max. It means an LEQ over some measurement period of time. What we do in the industry, you don't do 1/8 of a second compliance periods. Typically, you see either 10-minute periods or 1-hour periods in industry measurements. You need some set of data to look at and analyze, and you take the small piece of that data and you aggregate. So with that, my comments are concluded. My time is almost done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't think I have any questions at this time. Anybody else? Go for it.
I kind of asked Ms. Leno's opinion on various things, and I'd like to get your opinion. The standard that she was talking about was background noise at night, 25, probably, right?
It's going to vary. You can sort of look at the interim pre-construction measurements and see they're all over the place, but sure, they could be 25 at night, yeah.
So let's say that would be 30 max, but 5 over background, right? But it's whatever is greater. It didn't say whatever is lesser. It says whatever is greater. So if you have a 10 decibel difference, if you're operating within your permit at your maximum not to exceed number 40, but ambient was 25, wouldn't you expect it to be disturbed by that?
So certainly I would expect it to be audible, yes. You're going to hear it. And I think, as people have said, the standard is not an audibility standard. It's a reasonable standard. So yes, I would agree. You're going to hear that.
And the certificate was based on a health standard, and they based that on WHO, World Health Organization, which had a 40 decibel at night on an annual basis, right?
Correct.
And there was a lot of discussion in the record that how do we measure that for compliance. And so they said that's impossible to really regulate, but 40 seemed to be a number. So they had 40 not to exceed. But I still get back into they gave you a certificate. It had to be something that I think that could meet that's reasonable but protective of the health of the community. But LAEQ still has to come up with some type of a time period. And I don't find that the record's clear on that at all. I also believe that it's kind of I don't know if we can, as a committee, we're trying to say, based on everything that Mr. Needleman said and what our attorney said, is try to look at the plain meaning of the rule and have an interpretation. Looked at the record, it's kind of all over there, that it might be a rulemaking effort, which the full committee would have to deal with, not the subcommittee. We can only interpret what we have. I believe I asked you what you thought a reasonable period was at last hearing. You said 10 minutes. In our draft recommendation, we said the minimum, at least from the ANSI standard that we can see, would be 5 minutes. Has your opinion changed at all? Or do you think a lesser period would be appropriate or attainable?
I think a 10-minute period is a reasonable period because you're going to have six 10-minute periods at every hour. So you're slicing up the hour into six 10-minute periods. Again, I've seen 1 hour be a compliance period. 10 minutes, to me, is more, even more protective. So I think that's, if you want to go that route, that's also reasonable, but not an eighth of a second.
It's probably not a question for you. It would be more of a question for, I think, Mr. Needleman. As I was surprised that the infant didn't submit any written comments to our draft proposal to the full committee. You don't have to answer it, but I was a little surprised that we didn't have an opinion, I guess, on that area. I mean, you told us in your testimony that you think we got to the right place. I believe that we looked at the record and, you know, we're still fighting, or not fighting, but concerned about what the time period should be. And I guess I was just a little surprised. You know, you're not recommending something. I always like to try and look at where we are in any type of government, look at common ground and some type of agreement wherever possible. Is there a proposal by Antrim Wind that they think would be a reasonable time period that they could meet since they've been issued a certificate? And do you have an opinion on that at all? If you'd like.
We didn't submit written comments because I thought they would be duplicative. I intended to come here and just tell you what I told you today, which is I think you got it right and why. In terms of a recommendation for a compliance period, I don't think so. I you know, would respectfully say I think that's beyond the committee's purview. As you said, I think if we're going to adopt a specific compliance period, it would likely have to be through a formal rulemaking process.
Okay, thank you. I have nothing further.
Tom? I think we're all set.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up, Dr. Fred.
Thank Ms. Lerner and Ms. Lenoise for a great segue. They set me up good, and I thank them for that. They did, however, make it so I want to say a couple of things just to the start. I'm not assuming the committee is ignorant, but I'm hoping that they understand a couple of things that a lot of people don't seem to understand. When we think about wind, most of us realize that it's windier in the daytime than at night. Not so on top of the Antrim Hills. It's exactly the opposite. The strongest winds on average are at night, and they're lesser in the daytime. I could get into a reason for why that happens, but that's just a fact. And where we see down low, where we are, is that we get windier in the daytime. Up top, they get windier at night. Now, that has an interesting effect in that we have the most strict requirements for the wind and the noise at night, which is also not unreasonable. The second thing I want to do before I get into my main thing is that there's been some discussion about the compliance and checks after it, where there are questions of, did the thing comply? And in the 162H, it's very clear that any checks on complaints have to be done under the same meteorological conditions. It has never been done, and Mr. Tocci deliberately did not do it under the same conditions. One, for example, great example of his thing, he went out when we know that the strongest noises were always going to get late at night, just before dawn. That's when we have the deepest temperature inversion. He went out a little before sunset and went out for a couple of hours. It shows he was either totally incompetent or he deliberately misled with his results. Anything that Mr. Tocci said is totally irrelevant, wrong, misleading. I don't know how much else I can say about it. If you're going to check a complaint, it has to be under the same or very similar meteorological conditions. Period. If you don't do that, there's no point wasting time. Now let me get into the things I really wanted to start with. There are two very simple truths. Truths that even Antrim Wind and Mr. O'Neill would agree with. First is that weather is the dominant and almost the total determinant of how loud the noises from the turbines will be perceived by the neighbors of the facility. Almost everything depends on the weather. Almost nothing else makes any difference. Next, all noise complaints will come on nights with special weather, what I now name noise compliant weather. And I'm going to use that a lot, noise compliant weather. There will never be a nighttime complaint, a real complaint, in any other weather. It will always come with a particular kind of what I call noise compliant weather. So if you want to talk about anything else, you're just wasting all your time. Now the question here is, does everybody agree? And I will say all sound experts know what I mean by noise compliant weather. Pretty simple. Not as easy to measure and set up, but it's simple to explain. Strong winds at the turbines, because they make the loudest noises, and then a strong temperature inversion lower down from the hills. The reason for that is that when you get a nice temperature inversion, the sounds get trapped down. In the daytime, the sounds go everywhere. And so you get a certain amount out to the neighbors, some up there, out to space, wherever they go. At night, when you have a temperature inversion, they try to bounce up. It turns out, and maybe most of you know it, but if not, sound, the speed of sound is temperature dependent. So if you have warm air above cold air, sound waves will tend and bend and bounce back. It traps the sound in lower levels. Okay, there will never be excessive turbine noise in the neighborhood in any other weather. Therefore, your subcommittee should be only concerned with turbine noise in noise complaint weather, strong winds and an inversion. And Antrim Wind should only be concerned about the turbine noise in noise compliant weather. Now, given the cost of these hearings and the simplicity and minimal cost of making a few sound measurements in noise compliant weather, I assume, and I think it's true, they have made measurements in noise-compliant weather. They did not spend $65 million, and somebody running the place hasn't said, did we exceed? We don't know the weather, but forecast, we can send it out. They don't want to make a lot of measurements, the billions that they're talking about. They only make a few. The weather, noise-compliant weather, is forecastable. You go out, you pick your position, and you make the measurements. If you don't exceed in those, you don't have to waste anybody's time. Not your time, not my time, not their time. You only have to make a few measurements in noise-compliant weather. And if you don't exceed those, you don't have to come in here and take anybody's time. All you say is, I made them in the worst conditions imaginable, and they didn't exceed, therefore they're never going to exceed. They made the result. They made the measurements. They know the results, and some of them exceeded 40 dB, else we wouldn't be here. There would be no reason for them to waste time trying to explain and argue about averaging or anything else. They merely had to present the data. It was simple. All you had to do was ask a question, and I will just give you the question. And I'm unfortunately, I'm disappointed that when you when Mr. O'Neill was here, or Mr. Needleman was here, there's one quick question. Has Antrim Wind made measurements in noise-compliant weather? That's the only question you have to ask. You may have to follow it up when you find out what the answer is, but that's your only question. And I will concede my next 2 minutes to Mr. Needleman or Mr. O'Neill to answer. Thank you.
I don't think I necessarily want to do that. I think at the end we'll if the subcommittee has some.
That should be your only question.
We could ask that question at the end, but
well,
I think
you
I'm.
You should have asked it when Mr. O'Neill or Mr. Needleman. But they're there. You won't let me ask the question, right?
Well,
can I ask Mr. O'Neill the question?
No, we will ask the question later. That's what I'm saying.
We're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm finished. I'm open to questions if you have any.
I do have one question. Have you read the ANSI standard?
No.
No. My understanding is that there are some limits to when you can take measurements when it comes to wind and all those kinds of things.
Oh, I agree. But I'm saying the first thing you do is only do them when you're going to get the most noise. Now, whatever else you do, that's not my bag. Or that's not my department, said Werner von Braun.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is that you're saying to choose the time when it's the worst.
Yes.
From a wind standpoint, but that may not actually meet the ANSI standards. You might not be able to do that.
I'm missing the logic.
If it's too windy, you can't take measurements.
Oh, no, wait a minute now. I'm saying wind up at the hills,
yep,
and very little wind down below. If you watch the weathermen, they talk about clear, calm, and cold. When Keene, New Hampshire, and Concord, New Hampshire have their lowest temperature, there's no wind. Skies are clear, air is dry. So problems with measuring the sound things down, that's no problem. Measuring the sounds up at the hill, the ANSI standard doesn't, as far as I know, doesn't cover that.
All right. Tom? Okay. John?
The question, I guess, what you said is the weather conditions. The weather conditions that you explained was high winds up at the
turbine.
Yeah. Low wind down below.
Little or no wind down below.
Cold down below.
Right.
Warm up top.
Right.
Right.
Beautiful clear skies, bright moon, whatever you want.
Yeah. So that would be the worst case scenario for sound.
For the turbine noise getting to the neighbors.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be probably. Nights of noise, non-compliant.
Those would be the if there were going to be non-compliant noise. Those would be the nights. If you're wasting your time measuring other nights.
All right. I understand.
Okay. And with a smile.
With a smile.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ward.
You're very welcome.
All right, I believe that brings us to our last registered speaker, Nancy Watson.
Good morning. I'm going to refrain from speaking today.
Okay.
I just think everything's going to
be fine. All right. Thank you.
Did I get 2 minutes more?
No, I think we at this point it's time to. We need to keep the meeting moving along. So I think the last piece was we had talked about whether or not to, you know, if there were any additional questions of the subcommittee just in general of any speakers or allow the facility, you know, I guess, what was your thoughts on how to
If the committee has any other questions, they can ask it now, whoever they want to. That would be my my suggestion to you, but you can, the subcommittee can do however you want.
I don't have any other additional questions for anybody that I have thought of since asking the other questions. Do either of you?
No, I think it's covered, whether it be by individuals or collectively, I think, in the territory.
All right. So the next kind of piece on the agenda would be our discussion on the draft recommendations. I'm not sure if anybody else had anything to add. I mean, we have all kind of obviously spent some time looking at these and whatnot, and so I don't necessarily have anything else to add other than I think we may want to consider providing the full SEC with an actual recommendation of the if we do choose to go with these with the recommendations that are the draft recommendation, I think we should consider adding what the compliance interval should be. I think if we were to just send it over as is, I know it's not necessarily directly indicated in our charge that we have to provide them with a recommendation of what the compliance interval would be. But I think if we send it over without one, then I think they would still struggle with, okay, so what do we do with this from here? And you know, we've spent quite a bit of time researching this and going through this, and I think it would, you know, in the interest of time and making things, obviously there's been a lot of comments that this is taking a long time, and I think if we don't send it over with a compliance interval, then I think it's going to, I think it's only going to slow things down at the subcommittee's end, that they may need another subcommittee to figure out what that compliance interval is or whatnot. So I think we should send it over with a compliance interval. That's my opinion. I don't know if anybody else has any additional thoughts. What's that?
What is John Mark?
Well, I mean, the subcommittee certainly has the, you know, can send whatever recommendation you decide, you know, to do. But I would think that you're constituted under a certain order to consider things under certain charges, and you need to limit yourself to the charge. That would be my advice.
Hopefully we've got that deep sigh on the record. I've read what has been submitted, and I've spent a fair amount of time on this, and I reread our charge. Our charge does not request a recommendation. Our charge did not and cannot establish a rule. That can only be done by the full committee. And I think we're on our recommendation number 3. We're dangerously close to making a rule that we haven't been charged to do or have the authority to do. So I have a problem with that. We're between, you know, the public has to deal with the noise and looking at a 0.125 LAEQ. And the rule doesn't say that. The facility, Antrim Wind, has been using a 1 hour that they thought was reasonable. They talked 10 minutes, and then, you know, I think Ms. Lenoz brought this up in her statement why she was not agreeing with our third recommendation, is because the 5 minute, I guess, is an accelerated standard to set a background noise, where noise is somewhat constant, is my understanding. But I guess spend some more time, I think, looking at the ANSI standard for that and reading it myself and trying to analyze that. It's not really setting, as she points out, an LAEQT. And that T can be anything, right? It could be an hour or 10 minutes, it could be a year, you know, whatever the case may be. And it's not up to this subcommittee
to establish what that key is, other than looking at the rule, plain language of the rule, and anything else that we have at our disposal that seems to make sense in what that compliance standard should be. And I just sit here and I say, well, I can't do that. I think if we set a standard, it should be rulemaking. If we recommend a standard, it should also be done under the auspices of rulemaking, because the public has a right to opine on the rule. And I don't think that we're going to afford them the opportunity to do that. I also feel if we even make a recommendation, it's not going to be something that's going to be accepted by all. You know, we're still going to get into the taste great, less filling, right? The fact is, that comes to my mind, is that the committee that issued the certificate of site facility issued it on the basis of health and safety and a standard that could be met by the facility. Otherwise, they would have denied the permit. I mean, that's where I stand. They said, why even bother trying to set a standard that's too stringent if they can't meet it? You would say, don't build it, right? You don't meet the health and safety standard. But they allowed it to be built. So what that standard is, I can't tell you what it is. I don't know. They're the ones that made the rule. They're the ones that took the testimony. I think they're the ones that have to come up with a new rule to clarify what the compliance standard is. I mean, that's just one opinion on this committee, but that's pretty much my opinion. I would say on the third bullet that we have to seriously rewrite that and identify the problem, but not give them a recommendation.
Chair. How can you come up with the standard when you don't have any evidence? They say they can't meet the standards. There are no data to say they can't. You haven't asked, have they got any data to support what they say, which is you can't meet.
I think I'd like to, at this point, we've kind of closed the public comment period, so I'd really prefer at this point, I don't think we'll be taking any more testimony or anything. So
I have to agree very much with John. I have a hard time figuring out what the standards are also. And, to send that over with our recommendation, I think it's going to be tough for them.
Well, they could turn around, obviously, charge us to do something if they want, because, you know, seriously, we put a lot of time into this. But a lot more time, I think, would have to be put into setting a compliance recommendation, you know, and a lot of background data and information of how we got to that standard, I think, would have to be deliberated as well. Short of that, I would be hard-pressed, Mr. Eve, to make that third bullet recommendation in this draft.
So you want? Would you prefer to strike that?
No, I would say that it would. That we, you know, we reached the conclusion that there is a LAEQ T issue. T is undeterminable by this committee, and we recommend that it go to the full committee to identify or do a rule change. They're the only ones that can make rules. You know, the subcommittee cannot make a rule. And we're not charged with making a rule. We're charged with figuring what the existing rule says. And I think that's undeterminable based on our deliberations and our public comments, and everything that I've come down to, at least in my mind.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you have any questions, John Mark?
Should the committee, it's something to decide how they want to proceed, you know, taking a motion about adopting certain parts of that or not adopting certain parts of this, or maybe scheduling another public meeting to discuss how to handle this, or but you need to make a decision about what you want to do, because that was on the agenda.
Right.
And you don't, I mean, you don't have to. You can make a decision to postpone it and do something else.
I mean,
we can take a break if you want to. We can talk about what you should do next. I can give you my candid legal advice about that if you want to do that, too. So it's up to
yes.
you. Okay. So how about we take, what do you think, a 10-minute break?
Yeah. 10-minute recess?
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe 15.
Okay, 15.
Okay.
So
yeah.
15, so 12. You want to just say 12, 15? 12.
We're all there tied in the bedroom, and that's our time.
Yes.
It'll be a rush.